Leaders Questions with Ger Gilroy and Stuart Lancaster.
In association with Goal.
From Off the Ball.
All right, you're very welcome along to this week's Leaders Questions. Stuart Lancaster, as ever, is with us in studio. And on the line this week, we've got Ronan O'Gara. Before we go to Ronan, Stuart, what are your impressions of Ronan, and why do you think Ronan's going to be a good guest for us this week?
Well, I think it's experience, really. You know, he's, in terms of, if you took just coaches alone, the coaches that he's worked with during his career. Not just that, obviously the some of the players he's worked with, you know, the captains he's played under, both, you know, Munster, obviously with Ireland, the Lions, etc. And more recently, experiences of different leadership styles in different countries. You know, having gone to France, what's it like there? What I'm really interested to know what it's like in New Zealand in terms of how the Crusaders are led, you know, how much is player led, how much is coach led, and what he's learned specifically during that time. Because obviously to be a great coach, you have to be a great manager and a great leader if you want to be, you know, exceptional, really. So it'd be interesting to know from Rog, you know, where he's matured and developed in his leadership style and his journey, you know, as a transitioning from a player to a coach.
Maybe New Zealand's a good place to start, Ronan. Good morning to you. How you doing?
Yeah, great. Yeah, just good. Had a big day training, a bit of a stew day, but a bit of a Wednesday over here in terms of it's a big day before Friday night kickoff. So yeah, absolutely loving it. It's fantastic, but it was intense. So I'm looking forward to going to bed, but I've got a great hour ahead of me, and this is enthralling for me. Yeah, I think I have learned an awful lot, and I have been, I suppose, completely changed as a person, I would say, Ger, in the fact that, I would view things very differently having spent time with the Crusaders. I just think the positive environment has really rubbed off on me, and made me a far more rounded coach, hopefully.
Can you maybe talk a little bit about that? What is the environment? Why is it so positive? And what are the changes that you've noticed?
Well, I wouldn't think it's too dissimilar to Munster, maybe in the year I played and starting off with, I think in Irish sport, we are blessed with a great amount of really inspirational leaders. That's one thing that has struck me, having had time out of the country, I think. I played under... you go back to probably, you know, Keith Wood, Mick Galway, Paul O'Connell, in Munster. And obviously they were the captains, but there's, you mean, a captain might not necessarily be your best leader. And sometimes captains have the title, but there are other leaders in the squad that are just as important. And we might get to that later on again. But yeah, coming here, I think the environment is very positive in the fact that I think it would be consistent in probably behavior. So my time in Munster, I think you'd be skeptical enough or sheepish enough to put up their hand to answer a question in the fact that if it was a dodgy answer, they'd get the ball slagged off them. They'd be like fellas like Quinny roaring at Marcus, you shut up, that's a stupid point. But over here, for the first few months, literally, so if Fraser, if Scott Robertson is asking a question or looking for feedback, boys would be kind of, they'd have the hand up, dying to answer. And I was kind of going in my head, when is the slagging going to start here? When are they going to start picking holes in guys? But it just doesn't happen. And with a period of reflection, I think that's very powerful because it creates an environment or a culture where there isn't a wrong answer and you don't feel... that you will make a turkey out of yourself, which promotes subconsciously just positive behavior and a growth environment. And I think when you go into, and it was long before I arrived, obviously, but the Crusaders is probably what its history is 20 years, so it's quite new, Super Rugby and the themes there. So, you have whatever directly 60 people with the team or 50 people with the team, and genuinely everyone wants to get better, which on a daily basis is fascinating. But then as the months go by, it becomes, you actually see progress, real progress in front of you. And I suppose the difference for me would be the fact that even at high level of sport at home, playing for Ireland, I mean, this competition wouldn't have been as strong as it would be in the current squad competition for places. But there would have been guys that would have fallen into coffee clubs and had a bitch about the coach, had a bitch about a certain player playing in his position. But I think the big strength in New Zealand rugby is what's best for the team. It's repeated daily. It's repeated hourly. What's best for the team? Not how does change impact on me. We essentially aren't interested in that. It's what's best for the team, and everyone will get a shot. But when your time comes and you got to prepare, you know, whatever the stars, the second team as we call them, when you're in the stars, you got to make sure that you bring your A game to prepare the team well for the game on Saturday.
Do you think they always?
We could talk all day. Sorry, Joe, you just.
No, that's good.
Into shape.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. Well, because that's exactly what we're interested in. How that, like, do you know better? Was that, were they always like that? Did they always have that positivity of culture? Was that something that the current setup brought in? Is it something that they work on, that they remind people that you need to be positive?
Yeah, I would think Angus Gardner is the manager, and he's well travelled and an ex player. I think very unlucky not to be an All Black, a really successful background, then spent time in France and travelling around Europe, I think. Was coaching as well, and then went in as general manager to Crusaders, and I think they had a long-serving CEO, and I think the two of them obviously had a philosophy or a policy for recruiting. But also, you have to remember, Ger, like, for someone with the player roster they had, I think, was it from 08 to 17, they were barren years, which is swept under the carpet now. So, you know what I mean? It isn't a team that has dominated for 20 years. So, like, I suppose they say sport is cyclical, and yeah, I believe that as well. But at the minute, it's going well, but it can change quickly. But I think the foundations here are very, very strong. And, you know what I mean? I wouldn't even call myself a coach going there. I had 5 years done in racing, and it probably was, I was coaching as what I knew as a player, and picked up good bits from coaches and trying to do the best I could. But calling myself a coach is probably a loose term. But once you go there, they pretty shape you. But I wasn't far off from breaking, because in my head, I thought my way was better than the way they do it here. And I was kind of a more tell them, while in the Crusaders, it's kind of, you speak to them according to kind of, everyone is personality tested. So we have yellow dots, red dots, blue dots, purple dots, depending on what category of person you are. So people learn differently, people receive feedback differently, and people can see things differently. So our brains are programmed very differently. So you have to understand and connect with who you're talking to, and you have to know your player and know your detail. And you know, they wouldn't be big fans. There are times when you have to tell the players, and I think that was more the more recent feedbacks, when we're constantly doing, I suppose, feedback surveys and appraisals. And one of the things coming back was that sometimes they like to be told, and I as a test player, and they were there, what does O'Connell, O'Garan, O'Driscoll, what do they want coaches for? What do they need coaches for? But for me, he dictated absolutely everything when I had a good coach. He set the tone, the tempo, my mood for the day by what energy he brought to the first meeting of the day, and how organised he was, how prepped he was, and what vision he gave me as a senior player. So I get that sometimes the players just want to be told, this move will work here, but I think you have to be careful. Well, the way I see it, and Stuart is obviously far better and more experienced than I am in that regard, but the way I see it is that there's a certain amount of telling you have to do, but also you have to nearly shape their thinking, that when pressure comes on in games, they have the capacity to play on instinct, but also trust the game plan.
Yeah, that personality testing is something that we've spoken about before. You've gone through that whole process. Is it something you bring to work today, and is that something you would still be doing with Leinster?
Yeah, I mean, what Ronan said, he does sound very similar to Leinster. you know, the environment he's just described, you know, really well, actually. Sounds very, very similar to Leinster. You know, we would be very respectful of every player, you know, from the youngest to the oldest. We'd do our best to empower them all, make them feel part of the team. The team comes first. It's a positive environment, but equally, it would have a bit of telling in there, particularly at the start of the week. So I've had to adapt my leadership style coming to Ireland a little bit. But you know, obviously we're talking now, we're what, 10 days away from the Champions Cup final, and you know, I'm leading, you know, alongside Leo and the other coaches, the content for this week, but very much the players will own it next week, and that's ultimately what you're striving for in your team. And within that, to know your individual players and to know their personalities is absolutely key. You know, if you're working in a leadership team in any organisation, you've got to understand how to get the best out of people, how to make them tick. So we do use a profiling tool called Insights, which is different colours, but it's yellow, red, blue and green. And you're a mix of all four of these colours. And I actually only had a conversation yesterday with a young player, a very talented young player, who I feel has great strengths technically and tactically, but has some definitely areas to work on in terms of physically and is the mental side of the game, you know, resilience and how he leads, et cetera, So I said, right, we're going to get this profile done. So that's going to be done over the next 24, 48 hours. Then I'll sit down with him, go through it, get him to think about it. And this is a, you know, 19-year-old lad. But I see that as my job. You know, he's not actually close to starting for Leinster yet, but I do see it as my job to try and develop leadership and understanding of each individual's personalities within our team, from the bottom to the top.
Is that something everybody automatically accepts because you're coming to it and saying, look, everybody else has done this? Like, was that already in place before you came to Leinster, that personality testing?
They'd done it. I think the RFU had done it with some of the academy players.
Okay.
But I don't think anyone really understood why they were doing it and what the purpose of it was. It was more like, we're ticking this box.
Yeah.
So I sort of brought it to life because I'd actually used the similar tool. I mean, if I take, say, Robbie Henshaw, Gary Ringrose, James Ryan, so they would be naturally more introverted, as a lot of players in Ireland are, if I'm being honest. You know, so they're quite quiet. They, whether it's through their school system or the environment they've been brought in, but typically in Ireland there are a lot more players who are introverted, quiet, want to be told the information, and they're on receive, so to speak, and which is fine, obviously, in the lead-up to the game, but in the game the players have to lead it. You know, you can't just have one leader, Johnny or Sean O'Brien, driving it. You know, we need James Ryan, we need Gary, we need Robbie, we need these boys to be leading the team. So by showing them where they sit in their personality type, I'm saying to them, listen, this is a real strength because you're very good at accepting information, you're very good on detail, you know, you're supportive of the team, but you're going to have to step over this line here towards, you know, leadership, which means you have to be vocal in a meeting, you have to be able to communicate your point of view or whatever it is. And it's quite hard sometimes for introverted players to do that on a consistent basis, but if they prepare well, they think about what they're going to say, they can do it and they can become this leader. And then they can revert back to their, you know, normal self, which is quite quiet, you know, detail-oriented, etc. So it's just raising awareness of their own personality and then try to give them tools and encourage them to lead so that the leadership becomes shared amongst 10 players, 12 players, not two players.
Yeah. Ronan, is this new? Is this what the type of stuff that you've learned since going to Canterbury? Were you doing any of this with Racing at all?
No, completely different. It was, and it's very different rugby too. I think Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere, you know, I think the best example I would give would probably be that defences in Northern Hemisphere are really good, while in Super Rugby it's all out attack, and then maybe after a phase or two or a try or two, it's actually, geez, lads, we want to have a thought or two here about defence, you know, but they have no problems with 50-odd, 30-odd scorelines in Super Rugby. It's you have a go, we have a go, while I'm kind of saying to them, well, let's structure our defence here that doesn't give them opportunities to get cheap scores, and then we won't have to be as good in attack, but they just get so excited about the ball. And the skill level of the front five is very good. Their catch pass and I think their ability to run straight is really interesting. But aside from that, there isn't much between the hemispheres, I feel. But yeah, in France, it was very different. You know, the big thing that stuck with me in my initial months is obviously, I think, as a player, your head is in a bit of a spin, but just kind of butter, mayonnaise and ketchup and our bottles of Coke on the table at lunch and racing, you're kind of, it's eating away at your soul for just something so simple that can be rectified straight away, as in just, but as you, I suppose, get more into it, you realise, and one of the things that Tony McGann was good with me, in fact, that you just never assume that people know. Just because I'm standing next to the guy, you're not to assume that he's thinking exactly the same, because the mentality of top players especially is a little bit crazy, a little bit out there, and they need to be like that to be such insane competitors. So, but that doesn't mean that we all are thinking the same. So I think that's the beauty of a coach that connects with his players, is what's your consistency of message, and are you reviewing points that have become, I suppose, pillars of your performance over a period of time? Because it's easy to put on a video, a review of a game, and commentate on what went well and didn't go well, but I think what players get excited about is that you have probably consistency of behaviours and consistency of marking them and getting the best out of them. But with that, you need, especially in my case, which I think I've thrived under, is the fact that Razor and Super Rugby in the team, he changes the team. And by changing the team, you give, as Stuart said earlier, every person is valued, but you can only be valued if you play. If you're consistently in the bibs, it's very hard to say, well, I'm really part of this. But over a period of time, a season or two, if you have, you mean, two changes in the back line every week, I think that really creates a real group team culture, as opposed to these are the starters and these are the guys that are never playing. And I'm a bit spoiled, no doubt about it, in the fact that the Crusaders have players that can slip in and slip out, and it doesn't affect team performance. But I'd like to think that comes down to a bit of coaching too, Ger, and the fact that for me, the big emphasis I have in my head every session I do now is I need competitors, because the skill set of rugby players is changing nearly monthly. Because what backs do now, they might have to win a wide area ruck, the next time they might have to win a high ball, the next time they have to keep their composure to play a fella through a hole, the next time they might be going for a charge down, the next play they might be blocking a guy, the next time they might have to clear a ruck, the next play it might be blown out a ruck. So the amount of, I suppose, decision making and skill set is different even to when I played the game.
You've got to work on all those facets weekly, obviously.
Well, yeah, I mean, and the challenge as a leader in a sporting team is that you've got, like, you know, yesterday's session, 44 players training. Another five or six sat on the sideline. And, you know, as Roger said, you know, you're constantly trying to make sure that you get cohesion and confidence into every one of those individuals. And we had the conversation just off air, didn't we? We were just talking about, you know, what is it that leadership is? And leadership is actually, it's not just the big meetings. It's not just the, as I say, the review, or, you know, we did the review of Ulster on Monday morning, and yesterday was the Saracens, the build-up to Saracens, and how, you know, what's the DNA, how they're going to play the game, and how we're going to approach the game. But actually, what was more effective during the course of yesterday was probably four one-to-one meetings that lasted about 5 minutes each. And that connection that you make with people as a leader, the big challenge is sometimes for coaches, and I see it all the time, is you get so engrossed in your laptop and watching the opposition that you're going to play, or the game you've just played, or the training session you're going to play, you never get away from your laptop and on the gym floor with the players and make those connections. And it happens in organisations and businesses all the time, where the CEO, and it happened with me with England, you know, let's call, my title was head coach, but let's call it a director of rugby role. I found myself spending more time on everything else other than the players who were getting picked, which is ridiculous, really, because they're the ultimate ones that are going to affect the biggest effect on the performance.
Yeah.
So I think the challenge for any leader in a workplace is to connect and connect with 50, 60 people and to make everyone feel valued and to do it in a way that inspires them and motivates them. And, you know, but not, I've been in some environments and some are unbelievably negative, and you know, a young player gets shouted down for saying something, or they're always looking for faults, or they'll say, we want you to play an offloading game, and you offload the ball, then you call them out for doing it. But equally, I've been in other environments that will never, and I'd be interested to know Roger's answer to this, they never really actively review failure or something that doesn't go well. And I'd be a big one for that. You know, I wouldn't skirt around the difficult conversations about, okay, you know, let's review. So the Ireland boys come back after the Six Nations, right? Okay, I know it hasn't gone as well as you'd hoped. Let's have a chat about it. And they're like, do we have to go there? And I'm like, we have to go there. Or we lose against Ulster, you know, last game of the season. And, you know, the easy thing is to skip it and go, actually, you know, it was a dead rubber, really, and we don't need to worry about it. And because we've got Saracens coming around the corner. No. Let's sit down and talk about what we can learn from this. So just on the Crusaders, back to them, Roger. So if that was the scenario, would they assess? I mean, you've probably not lost many games. Have you lost a game this season? You've not lost, have you?
Once.
No,
we did.
We lost. The Waratahs.
Yeah.
And would you be as forensic, and would it be a positive environment? You know, or would the coaches or you or Razor, would he call players out or hold people accountable, or is it?
Yeah, just to take you back a little bit, I think the biggest learning the Crusaders got, Stuart, was the British and Irish Lions defeat at home. I think the philosophy and the way they viewed rugby changed that night.
Did they expect to win?
They expected to win, but I think it was more the manner of the defeat.
Yeah.
And essentially,
they couldn't score and couldn't break down the defence.
Yeah, clear definition of how you played the game in terms of like, you know what I mean? So a winter game and a summer game in terms of the ratio of, you know what I mean, ruck to kick. So on your own half, like in Super Rugby, sometimes you just play a ball and then kicking becomes a last resort. But what they learned from that night basically was in winter and June, when it's really difficult, you know what I mean? You want to be kind of having minimal 2 to 3 rucks and clearing, having your exit strategy. But yeah, after the Waratahs game, yes, a similar thing. We probably, it's interesting, a little bit of a kind of a consistent picture in the fact that played in the famous, the SCG.
SCG, yeah, he played, that's right, yeah.
Big oval, difficult. If you wanted to use an excuse to get your bearings and on a rugby pitch there, grass a little bit longer, wet ball, wet conditions. But the message we gave to players was to play. I think as a coaching group, we got that wrong. I think we probably overestimated their skill set in difficult conditions while Phil Out won the high ball and they got a lead. And in that kind of conditions, it was really hard to do anything with the ball. So we as a coaching group had to take responsibility in the fact that we didn't get it tactically right, yet it was addressed, and you'd be kind of saying, well, where does decision-making and instinct and playing the conditions and playing pressure rugby come into it? But in the fact that you never assume and it wasn't addressed, we didn't set up our players to succeed. So it was good learnings. And it was addressed then, because every Monday morning the leaders meet and they feedback to the head coach. The head coach comes in with his 5 points to tip off the coaches about what we want from the strategy meeting, which is next. Then the strategy meeting leads into units meeting, into team meeting, and units review, team review. And it would be addressed. Monday is a big review day, and it's something I'm strong in too, about when you play Saturday, I think the player from talking to, it was actually Richie McCaw, I think, who said it, and it was a good point. And the players, if there's a kind of a graph that they adhere to, so it goes up. And about Thursday, I think in a player's mind, they're starting thinking about the opposition. It's what they found in Super Rugby. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, they're still getting over the previous game. While the opposite applies for a coach. The graph for the coach has to be all organised on Monday. You hit it full of energy. And then that's, as you say, where the skill of a good coach comes in. What is the capacity of each player to retain the information I'm about to deliver? And is it the right moment? And they have to be in the right mindset for that. And that's about you creating a positive environment, I feel, for them to be taken on the amount of information you're giving them. But yeah, there is definitely, I think players, I think crave honesty, respect honesty, but they respect your capacity to deliver, as you say, the same point to an uncapped 18-year-old as it would be to Ryan Crotty. And I think that's a skill in a good coach, the fact that he can call out the superstar and he can compliment the growing kid.
It's having that base of knowledge of every single individual and dealing with them as individuals. It's coming back a little bit to the personality testing is one aspect of that, but your own personal interaction obviously colours how you deal with people and how you speak to them.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, there are some things you just can't avoid because they all want to play. But I think if you give them a message that they can believe in, it really helps the group. So I think you got to remember too that for this game, I think that option A is better and you tell them why, but you also stress it's for this game. And that may, and it does change in rugby because you have a lot of performing players and then you've other guys that are non-performing. So it can change very quickly. But I think you always have to give them a little bit of a carrot that they can go chase down, as long as it's realistic. You mean, I suppose, I'm a little bit spoiled in the fact that I genuinely believe it's of the 17 backs I have, I wouldn't really have that kind of, oh shit, does this guy have to go on moment that I would have in racing, where I'd be kind of going, oh God, I hope he doesn't come on, you know? But yeah, that's the way I see it as well, you know?
What would be the difference in terms of your experience of Ireland and your experience of New Zealand of player empowerment and players driving and leading the programme versus the coach leading the programme?
Yeah, that's it's a good question, sure. I suppose I'm from the era too where the Munster team was very, very player-driven.
Was it?
And very, had exceptional leaders and exceptional standards and I think maximised and got the best out of each other but would have craved a little bit more from experience or news maybe from a top coach. But didn't happen. And you know what I mean? I suppose I had the same coach for Munster I had for Ireland. At the Lions, it was interesting just to see the difference in guys from different nations and Graham Henry in 2001. And he showed me leadership straight between the eyes. And I thought it was a great comment. I got the day of the last test in Sydney in 2001, I'd been going well on the kind of midweek team. And Johnny Wilkinson was obviously the starter. Neil Jenkins was the other option. And Neil Jenkins wasn't basically far off a trip to Lourdes. His two knees were the size of balloons. He could barely walk. the team was announced. And number 21, Neil Jenkins. And I was kind of going, oh, no. This couldn't, you know, he literally couldn't train. And I remember Henry said to me, he just goes, you know, Raj, he goes, if there's a field goal, 2 minutes to go off in 45 minutes, I'm backing this guy to kick it. And at the moment, you're kind of going, no, I don't see that. But with the benefit of hindsight, you go, yeah, absolutely proven. In those kind of high stakes games, I think that was a moment of leadership from him, because Jenkins does exactly what it says in the tin. He kicks goals all his career from 45 meters. At that stage, I was a complete rookie. I wouldn't have been in that category. So I think, you know, I mean, you could toss it out maybe. Well, what happens if he got injured? If Johnny got injured after 10 minutes, then it would have been an interesting scenario. But in terms of it was a different game back then. Obviously, penalties were far more prominent in winning games than probably scoring tries were. So I think that was an example of it. But yeah, with Ireland, with you know, there wasn't much turnover in our team, Stuart. And with Munster especially, there was kind of two or three maybe new signings a year. So it was a very settled team, a very competitive team, but really driven by, a number of leaders, probably double figures, I would say.
And what qualities did they have that stood them apart as leaders?
Hugely varying. So, for example, someone that wouldn't jump off the page as a leader would Dennis Leamy, for example, who was quiet and, as you said, a little bit like the three guys from Leinster that you mentioned earlier on, and the fact that in his shell a little bit, but when he spoke, you kind of were going to myself, oh, this is so good. I wish he spoke more often, but you have to wait another 4 months. Mm. But he had a great capacity to listen, and a seriously underappreciated skill. The guys who are able to actually listen and process information and actually then just say it quietly to a teammate to make the team better. The Rula Bula, or you wouldn't know what that word is, Stuart, sorry.
Mayhem.
The guys, yeah, the mayhem, shouting, that's the easy role to play. I think the leadership role is actually composure, I think, is hugely underappreciated. I think a capacity to actually deliver a message, an appropriate message to your peers is, I think, what separates Sam Whitelock. I think he has a great capacity to deliver a message, an accurate message that encapsulates exactly what the coach wants for this session. And, his way of words are fascinating. Like, what does that look like? So what does that look like for us in terms of, I think it's a good question asking a rugby player when you're doing a team run or you're doing a play. What does that look like? And I think you learn as much from not necessarily the players with the names. Kieran Reid is obviously very impressive. There's guys here that are, Matt Todd is just, he's a leader in the fact that his performances lead the way. He doesn't speak at all, ever. If he's asked a question, he'll answer, Stuart, but
yeah.
He'll have 20 plus tackles every game. He'll have about 40 rucks. And he'll be first to train on Monday morning, roll up the sleeves, and never miss a session. His consistency of preparation makes him a leader. Mm.
What was your leadership style like as a player at that point, and how has it evolved to now?
I suppose the huge strength, weakness, potentially of me looking back would have been, we were so emotive. So every night in the Clarion before European Cup game, we'd have a circle, Stuart, and we would have, when Mick Galway spoke, you'd have, the whole room would be, the whole room, but the majority of the room would be in tears. His capacity to deliver a rousing speech was unmatched, and it was new and everything. I get all that. It was new and the huge following support and Munster, but just his capacity and his way of words and kind of making it out to be so much bigger than it actually is. But at the time, you don't know that you're the player and you think you're going into Thomond Park and the whole world is watching you. And if you miss this kick, everyone around the whole world, hundreds of millions, will know you missed the kick. That's the way it was sold to you, and you believed it. And you do anything possible to perform for your teammates. But yeah, I think it's a big strength and a big weakness in the fact that whatever it is going through the years, the Irish team have always had the capacity to emotionally play, but then the following week after a big victory, really struggle to back it up.
So would you be that guy then, that leader who could emotionally inspire your teammates, but then the next week you know, you struggle with it, or what were you like?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think definitely, yeah, would have struggled, Stuart, because I suppose when you came in, standards were so different in the fact that, like, Munster were looking to keep Toulouse under 50 points. That was where it started. And then you got to a final in 2000, and it was probably the easiest one to win, and you don't win. Then you have to wait 6 years to win it. And I think it was obviously a work in progress and learning on the job, which is very different to the environment rugby players in Ireland come into now. They nearly expect to win European Cups, and they expect to win Grand Slams. But that wasn't the standard before. And the type of leader I was, I would think, I would have been hard on driving standards. And I would think I would have been, yeah, a cranky player, Stuart. I would have been very demanding of players. But then I would have thought a strength of mine would have been capacity to put my hand up and say, sorry about that, let's go for a coffee. You know, I got it wrong. It just means a lot. I didn't mean to snap. And as you know, what happens on the pitch, there's different rules. If I had this argument in the classroom or in the gym, which I think it's different, but it was heated for a reason because we're on the pitch and, you know, there's different rules on the pitch. That's how we're probably...
So are you a cranky coach? Like
No.
Because the reason I'm asking the question is because obviously I've worked with lots of players who became coaches, and sometimes their strengths of their leadership style as a player, they sometimes don't actually bring that through as a coach, or vice versa. They actually bring through the negative traits of their leadership style as a player into, you know, coaching. Or the third area, which I often see, is that they get frustrated because players don't see the game the way they see it. So they struggle with empathy. You know what I mean? They don't say, well, why don't you see the space in the backfield? It's obvious, you know. But obviously, they're a 22-year-old developing player.
Yeah, no, that's a good. I don't have those issues in my head, thankfully, and I think that's obviously what a lot of people would have commented on potentially for players that are going into coaching. They struggle with that, but maybe I've been conscious of that. But I actually. You know what I mean, correct myself and make it known when we review it. Like, rugby on a laptop is very easy. See, if you press pause, you can't press pause in live sport. So, boys, my role here is to try and make it as easy as possible for ye for that 80-minute exam every Saturday. So I think in that regard, I would have been, before the Crusaders, I would have been kind of the opinion what could potentially go wrong. Now I would be like, wow, this is some opportunity for whoever, you know what I mean? So for example, if someone cried off, you'd be like, oh geez, that's good, that'll be a big loss for the team. Well, now it doesn't cost me a thought. I just go yeah, fine, no problem.
So you're a bit more, you know, optimistic now than pessimistic.
Correct, that is exactly the English I was looking for. Way more optimistic. Way more optimistic.
And do you think you could have the capacity to become a head coach, and do you want to be?
Yeah, I do, definitely, yeah, I do. But I think it's probably only in the last 6 months that I can see the pieces of the jigsaw fitting together. Up to now, I wasn't really getting that correlation between backs, defence, attack, environment, selection, piecing it together. But now I'm kind of getting to see how it all fits together and what's really important in shaping your team and what you need to get right in your week and what, I mean, I think you're always thinking if you were the boss here, what you were doing. But the other side of it too is being in an environment where you're on the grass is the bit that I enjoy the most. So I'm not really worried at the minute for what my so-called title is, as long as feel like that you have at least responsibility for half the team, which I have with the backs. So that would be the minimum. And then I think as long as you are realistic and kind of saying, am I making improvements and am I getting better, then you stay in that environment. So, yeah, I would be a head coach, but I don't think, to get the best, Raj, it would be... it you know what I mean? It's certainly, if I had gone into a head coaching job 2 years ago, it would have been a dramatic failure.
The bit where you talked about the, it's only the last 6 months, you kind of see how they all knit together. What was the penny that dropped for you that kind of, okay, I get it now. What happened there?
Well, I just kind of see maybe how, you know what I mean? The mindset of a player is just so much different to the mindset of a coach, I think, and the fact that, like, for example, we have top All Blacks who, if you suggest something, they straight away would be, how does change affect me? And one of seven maybe can see the change, how it affects him, but also how it might affect the winger if he does this. So he has a capacity to explain what I'm proposing to himself and also explain it to his wingers, which is a really good strength during the fact that he can see it from everyone's point of view in the back line. Some people are very insular and they just see it exactly how it will affect them. But as the coach, you need to be all over essentially everything, because there could come a question from anyone at any stage. Well, if they do that here, what do you want me to do? And you have to have a viable answer. And the great thing in the Crusaders is I learned within 4 months is I'm not too sure there. Can you help me out? And I think that's leadership. I think that's actually a good sign that you're vulnerable, because vulnerable is also a sign of leadership. It's, I think players respect that, the actual that, you know, and I got that in racing and in spades, and I wasn't too sure to start with at a piss take when Joe Rocococo was asking me about his positioning as a winger. And I said to him, Joe, I made a joke. I just said, Joe, you're asking me about where you should be positioned. I said, I've never played on the wing. Please help me here, Joe. And he, but he actually, because he's such a respectful person, player, and hopefully the message and kind of advice slash preparation you were doing, he bought into it, that he actually valued your feedback to the point where he was going to position himself exactly where you told him to. And that was kind of a big learning for me, kind of going, I have someone like Joe Rocococo actually takes this word for word, so I have to probably maybe have a look at how I'm delivering my message to other people as well. So, yeah, I think how it piecing it together, Ger, is the fact that I think, you know what I mean, the defence in racing, I see the importance of, you know what I mean, defence wins championships, doing the backs of Crusaders. The next thing I'd love to get, you know what I mean, I think the beauty of what Stuart doing is two sides of the ball, and that's what it's all about, you know. I think you at that stage you can make a decision, where can I be world class in, and I don't know where I can be, but unless you have a go off it, then you'll always have those question marks in your head, because the manager role, no, it doesn't appeal to me in terms of picking the team or doing the contracts, or I actually love the actual plotting of getting 15 competitors to start and then seven more coming on. That's the way I view it, but I don't have that responsibility here, obviously, but I have the responsibility of there's 17 backs every week and I have to prepare 10 of them to get to fire every week, and there's a fierce amount of satisfaction in that.
So you've got both sides of the ball now over the last couple of years.
No, I haven't. No. Well, sorry. No, not.
No, defence. He does attack.
Stuart is doing.
Yes, I do
he's
both.
He's doing team attack and he's doing team defence. I'm only doing backs, and I did the team defence, but
not at the same time.
No, exactly. So essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, the best way to describe it. So I would be, if Leo would be the director of rugby and he would be doing what Scott Robinson's doing, I would be the head coach in looking at both sides of the ball, attack and defence. And that gives you a really good perspective on the game, whereas Rog is more in one category of right, looking at attack. And what he's saying is he'd like to evolve to that head coach position where you're looking at the overall team strategy. I think the key thing for me, you know, when I think about my evolution as a leader and as a coach, and he's in the perfect position to do that, is you want to be learning and thinking about what would I do in this situation if it was me, all the time. You want to be studying and learning about leadership and coaching by reading up on it, watching podcasts, listening to things like this, going to visit other coaches, asking good questions. But at the same time, you want to be a brilliant number two. So you want to make the number one decisions work. You know what I mean? So you don't want to be that guy in the background who's almost waiting for him to go so you can get the gig. That's the entire opposite. What you should be doing is thinking, OK, so I'm not in that position. I mean, I remember sat as England Saxons coach for 4 years. Martin Johnson was head coach. And we had to do an exercise as part of a coaching qualification was, you are the England coach. And you've now got to prepare the team for the week. So you had to do a whole exercise in what your first meeting would be, what your first training session would be, how you'd prepare for the game leading into that game. That was probably 12 months before I became the actual head coach. Never in my mind did I think that would ever happen. But that preparation period of 4 years definitely gave me huge insight into what I would do if I got the opportunity. And obviously I did, ironically. But, you know, at Leinster now, Leo makes the final decision on selection and everything else. I see my job very much to make those decisions work. So if he changes the team, as Roger said, our job is to make that work. But that doesn't mean I can't stop preparing and learning to be a leader to go into normal position, as Roger can be. But the other thing I'd say as well is there is no rush as well. You know, so sometimes as coaches or as leaders, we're in a rush to be the number one. You know, and you know, if you, let's say you make a number one position as a head coach or in a CEO in an organisation at 40, you know, it's a long time to stay in a number one position till you're 60 odd or whenever you retire. You know, so don't be in such a rush to get there. Would be part of the feedback I'd give to any leader out there.
Yeah, and especially if things don't go well, for example, sport is stupid in that it refuses to learn from people's mistakes. It's like, oh no, that's it. We've boxed you off there. That didn't work, and so therefore it will never work again.
Yeah, sport more so than any other business, really. It's so judgmental on what can be often 15 minutes of a game or one refereeing decision that changes the result from, you know, there's a great book I read. It was about the Ryder Cup, and I think it was called The Captaincy Myth, about how one putt that has nothing to do with the guy who's, you know, being the captain of the Ryder Cup goes in or doesn't go in.
Yeah.
And suddenly everything he's done is made to look miraculously and brilliant, or if he doesn't go in, he's made to look what a ridiculous decisions he made right the way through. You know, so how the result shapes the narrative in sport. It does happen in business because you get a quarterly review, you get a financial, but you're a lot more in control of the outcome of that than you are as a rugby coach.
Yeah, I think it's Richard Gillis wrote that book. Is that right?
Yeah.
Rodan, what are you doing to sharpen your...
I think Stuart's point there leads me into, just got me thinking. I think a massive emphasis I have going forward is actually, I think the enjoyment and the trust and unity of your management team. I will place a huge emphasis on that because Stuart's point is there. You'll be surprised the amount of people in rugby in good clubs where the number two is trying to shift the number one. You know, and it's an awful trait in a person, and I think you can actually even see it from the outside, or you can see it when you meet the people that, you know, there's something at play here. And it's ripe in French rugby in the fact that, you know, I mean, there a lot of people are actually out for themselves, but actually sometimes you have to take a step back, and I always find sharing ideas and Stuart, I don't know him that well, but I always find the secure people share ideas, confident people back themselves and are very open, and the guys that have kind of are very narrow-minded, they don't have good things to say about other people, which is quite disappointing in men, you know what I mean, 50-odd years of age or whatever age people are in coaching circles. But the actual, I think, if you have a united management team, of, you know what I mean, because essentially you could have 17 people, and if they're all pulling in the one direction, you would be surprised the bounce or the kick or the knock-on effect that will have on the playing group. Players will sniff a weakness in any management team. They'll sniff an opening to kind of create, conquer and divide. In fact, where, because the players bounce off different coaching members, in fact, of, you know what I mean, so three number nines, so two number nines go to the assistant coaches, and why am I playing this week? And if they're not getting the same message, but you have that multiplied by 30 players, George, so it is so important that you have an absolute, I think, strong relationships with your, you don't have to be best buddies, but I think there has to be so much trust there that that could be a major point of difference. And it's something that I have in my head in terms of, do you mean, who would you like to work with? Who would essentially, because it essentially is, have to be something that you're passionate about, that you absolutely love, and that you can actually, the whole point of this is that you want to be enjoying these days. It can't be stressful. It's stressful to a point, but I think competitors or people that have achieved a lot in this sport, they don't really think upon it as stressful. They think about it as an opportunity, but that opportunity gets better when you like doing it with people you care about. And that's something we emphasize a lot. I think caring environments are people that care for each other get up off the ground quicker. You'd be very surprised and very fascinated by how you can measure that.
There's a great leadership book by a guy called Jim Collins called Good to Great, and he talks about what makes the great companies. And he said there's two things really: get the right people on the bus first, then drive it somewhere great. So you've got to get the right people. And secondly, level five leadership is a combination of personal humility and will, the will to win. And if you stick with those two principles alone, you wouldn't go far wrong, really. Roger's right, get the right people, you know, working together, the right chemistry, people you can trust, and talented people, then, you know, that's why, you know, when people said to me about other opportunities, I kept coming back to, well, why would I leave Leinster? Because the good people, the players are good, it's a good environment to work in. And also the point that Roger makes about enjoying it as well.
Yeah.
You know, I put myself personally, you know, the family in a really difficult position, a fantastic position to be national coach of England and everything else. But I never forget the story this guy told me once. He said, imagine there's three balls in life that you're juggling, the glass balls. One's your family, one's your health, and one's your job. And you drop one of those balls, how would you feel? And I've definitely learnt that, you know, that you have to, as well, if you want to be a leader and you want to go into a leadership position, that's great. But don't forget the other glass balls that go with it.
Jim Gavin uses the glass balls analogy with the Dublin footballers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Where did you get it?
I can't remember. I must have read it somewhere. But it's probably something in my mind, but I thought it was a really good...
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where I got it from, but... you know, particularly more so recently, you know, thinking about, well, my dad passed away last year. You know, I keep thinking about the memories. I did a talk, actually, The Pursuit of Excellence, Is It Worth It? Question mark. And this guy contacted me afterwards, and I actually said it is worth it, because, but to get the balance right, you know, you need to keep all three balls alive. He said, but do you have any strategies for achieving that? You know, because I'm trying to be the best leader I can, but I want to be the best husband I can and the best dad I can, and, you know, I want to make sure I've got some sort of life myself, you know, to try and at least, you know, go to the gym.
Yeah.
it was nice that, you know, that sort of feedback. And I just gave him examples of how my wife and I try and get that family balance right. I live in Dublin, she lives in Leeds, the kids live in, I mean, Roger's, you know, taking his kids and family around the world, and, you know, it's a really tricky balance for leaders, I think, in any job, not just sport.
The point that Ronan makes about having to like the people you work with, though, you know, I was very struck by your description of your dad's funeral and the Leinster players coming over, and yeah, how that actually did have an impact on you. And I guess when you're making a decision about whether or not you want to spend time with people, stuff like that really matters.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was no... You know, this wasn't just a one-hour car journey. This was a flight from Dublin to Manchester. It was to hire a car to get from Manchester to a tiny little town called Penrith, to stay in a travel lodge, to come to a tiny little village called Colgate, and to come at 11 o'clock in the morning to meet a guy, to be there for a guy who they never really met, but to do that for me. So, you know, there's not many people would have done that, I don't think.
Yeah, and Ronan, that when you say you
but
can...
That's, yeah, I think in fairness, that's the organisation Leinster have at the minute, you know, and that, you know, I'd like to think that still is Munster, and that was Munster most definitely, and that's a strength of Irish rugby. I think it's a strength of Irish people, because...
Definitely a strength of Irish people.
The provinces are really strong, but, like, so is the national team, and the rugby community are are definitely special people. And you know, I mean, Stuart doesn't hear it because he's in the bubble, but I'm out of the bubble. But like, he's transformed Leinster, and he's been the probably, you know, I mean, the missing ingredient in that regard. And but big players crave that; they crave that detail. But it's also, they would have made it their business to be there, and I think that's one of the values that's associated with leadership too. Is what does it mean to you? So it meant a lot to those guys to get there to shake his hand, because that's what they stand for. And I think that's one of the things we got from the time I came through in Munster about, you know what I mean, stuff like, nowadays it's great in social media, there's all the clips of sweeping the sheds. That's been done for 20 years, yet there was no bloody camera phones 20 years ago. You know, it was just a done thing. Well, people didn't look for pats in the back, but that was the way you were kind of brought up in our time. And I think it's the exact same thing that you try and teach your kids about please and thank you are the most important things for setting an impression when they meet other new people. And I think that's the great thing about, you know what I mean, the pursuit of excellence. Is it worth it? Yes, it most definitely is, but there'll be bloody plenty of bumps on the way.
Look, we've done an hour. It's been great. Ronan, thanks very much. Enjoy your sleep tonight. And thanks a million for joining us.
See you, lads.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, Ronan. Thanks, mate.
It's Ronan O'Gara on this week's episode of Leaders' Questions. His journey around the world is something, obviously, you know, there is another side to that. He talks about his kids going into school on their first day, not a word of French when they were in France, and now they're in New Zealand. Like, in years to come, they'll look back on the amazing experiences that they have. But, you know, you've got to have a young family. These are the other sides that you have to take these decisions as a group, as a collective, as a family. And, you know, there's sacrifices to be made along the way.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a very delicate balance, I think, for anyone who wants to go. And, you know, there are people who don't want to take that route, which is 100% fine as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to be part of a team without necessarily putting yourself into the leadership position, you know, to be a good team player, but also to have that, you know, I think there's a graph I've seen where you've got, it's just a straight line, save a life or make a difference. And, you know, so where do you want to be? Do you just want to enjoy life as it is and have holidays and, you know, work and be part of a team and everything else? Or do you want to make a difference? And it's not right or wrong, you know, it's just the way you want to be. I think the balance everyone should try and achieve is to do both.
Yeah, a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
Yeah. I think Ronan O'Gara is going to make a good head coach. It sounds like he's gearing up.
Yeah, I think the key thing for me, if I was him, would be the point I'm making about taking his time. You know, he's in such a great learning environment. You know, he could stay there 2, 3, 4 years or whatever, move to a different environment another couple of years. You know, sometimes when you've only ever been in one environment, you only know one way of doing things. Yeah. And the more you can get out there, and he's obviously done that probably more so than most. And he's lucky in that, well, he's obviously put himself up there to go to New Zealand, but he's lucky to give him the opportunity to coach in there, because it's a very hard, closed shop to go into. I applied for 2 jobs there, didn't get an interview because their philosophy of appointing head coaches is New Zealand only.
Yeah.
So he's found a way in through the sort of assistant coaching role. And, you know, it's amazing, you know, what he'll be learning.
Was that after the World Cup?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you'd been down there a little bit.
Yeah, there were 2 jobs, and then I applied for the Queensland Reds job as well.
Right.
So, and I got interviewed for that, so I flew to Brisbane, but then I was thinking, you know, the kids were 15 and 16, I went and looked at the schools, and the education system was completely different. I thought, well, should I do this on my own, leave the kids and Nina in Leeds, and how would that work? Anyway, I didn't get the job.
So. It would have been too hot down there anyway.
Exactly.
Far too hot.
Exactly.
Much more suited to the Dublin temperament, the weather. Well, I'm really glad you didn't get that job, I have to say. And I think all the Leinster fans will be as well. So, yeah, that's this week's show.
Cheers.
Thanks very much. We'll see you next week.
Leaders Questions with Ger Gilroy and Stuart Lancaster.
In association with Goal.
From Off the Ball.